Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Caregiver Speak, the first online support group by caregivers and for caregivers. I'm Marjorie Pabst, your host and the author of Words of Care, my most recent book on caregiving. Our aim at Caregiver Speak is to provide information, tools, tips for the busy caregiver by those who know the issues best, caregivers themselves. I am delighted to welcome John Mills back to the show to update us on the latest news regarding the Affordable Care Act and what it means for you. John Mills is the co-founder of eCareDiary.com, the sponsor of this show, and has been a caregiver multiple times. John has been updating us for the last several months on what the law means for caregivers. And this month, our focus is on health insurance marketplaces and how people, you as caregivers, can get coverage through them. We would love to hear from you today, so do call us at 347-857-3299 with your questions for John. John, welcome back. Great to
have
the show. We've discussed the Affordable Care Act on past shows. Can you give our audience a brief overview of the law and some of the key dates in it?
Thank you, Marjorie. It's a pleasure to be here. Yes, I'd be happy to sort of give a quick refresher on some of the things we've discussed on previous shows and some of the key dates that are coming up. So as we've talked about, you know, the Affordable Care Act, actually, it's hard to believe, but it was actually signed a little over 3 years ago now, in March of 2010. And there are a number of things that have already gone into effect, which help consumers and especially caregivers. Some of those things that we've talked about in previous shows are the fact that you now get zero cost preventive care. So if you need a physical, your annual physicals, pap smears, mammographies, other types of exams are they are now free. They don't cost you anything to get. Additionally, the law allows people to keep their children up to age 26 on their insurance policies. Actually, it's not just their children, it's dependents, but it's generally their children. And, you know, it doesn't matter if they already have a job. It doesn't matter if they're not in school or not. Basically, it's a blanket rule that they can stay on their parents' policies up to age 26. Additionally, the law requires insurance companies now to spend specific minimum amounts on providing health care coverage. So insurance policies that are sold to individuals and small businesses, and those are businesses that are sizes 2 to 50, the insurance company must spend at least 80 cents of every premium dollar or 80% of their premiums on medical care, and for employers that employ more than 50 employers, it's 85 cents of every dollar on medical care. You will probably start to hear sort of the big date around the Affordable Care Act is finally here, and that is the health insurance exchanges and the subsidies to help uninsured individuals. And starting in October, people will be able to go to the health insurance marketplaces if they don't have insurance and shop for health care coverage. So that's really sort of a big date that's staring us in the face. And believe it or not, it's only about 6 weeks away now.
Yes, it's. We were talking just before the show aired that we're here in the summer, and it just sort of the summer kind of can lull us into thinking, oh, there's time, but. Time is coming up very quickly. We keep hearing, John, about going live on October 1, these health insurance exchanges. Can you explain to our audience exactly what that means?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. You get into an industry and you start to use a lot of jargon. So when we talk about going live, it basically means they are open. And health insurance exchanges I mean, when people talk about them, they mainly talk about them being online marketplaces, but they're really much more than that. And so when I say an online marketplace, I mean something like Amazon.com or Expedia, where you can buy travel tickets. But actually, they're much more than that. While I think the hope is the bulk of people will use the online marketplaces to go and purchase insurance and to qualify for assistance in paying the premiums if they are eligible for it, there are going to be multiple ways that people can go and access, get access to insurance. So the federal government has what they're calling a no wrong door policy, and that means that while the health insurance marketplaces are the main vehicle for obtaining insurance for the uninsured, there are other ways that people can get them. So, for example, they can go directly to a health insurer, and basically the health insurer can help them enroll in these new individual policies if they are participating in the Affordable Care Act programs for the individuals who are uninsured. Additionally, you can go to an insurance broker. So if you currently use an insurance broker or know an insurance broker, you can go to them. They can help you enroll. And then finally, you can go to these people who are called navigators, and they are people who are actually specifically hired by the health insurance marketplaces to basically help people enroll or navigate the census system, navigate, you know, the enrollment process, which is why they're called navigators. So there are multiple ways that people can go and access insurance. And I think that there is an understanding that while many, many people today use the internet for multiple purposes, not everyone is comfortable going that way. So that's why there are all these multiple avenues.
I see. How, John, would you get in touch with one of these navigators? How do you go to that website, the government website, or how do you do that?
That's a great question, Marjorie. So there are going to be multiple ways that you can access the navigator. For one thing, there will be an 800 number, a toll-free number that you can call, and you can talk to them by phone. Additionally, they will be out in the community, so they are likely to, and while we don't know exactly where they're going to be, we have been getting some information. So, for example, they're likely to be in Social Security and Medicare offices. They're also likely to be available in social services offices where people may be signing up for other types of assistance. They also, in a number of states, community organizations that do outreach to people who are lower income. So, for example, food banks, and other types of organizations that may be, you know, helping people do job training, et cetera, they have also, in some states, have signed up to be navigators and have been approved. So there will be places that you can find out about them. I mean, the best way to probably find out about them will be the 800 number that will go, that you'll be able to call starting October 1, and they'll be able to direct you to a navigator if you want to talk to one in person.
Yeah. Well, that's great information, John. And, you know, I guess if I were looking, the first thing I would do also, you and I have talked a lot about this too, is determine whether you're in a state that is working with the federal government and the exchanges, or whether your state has gone out. I'm sitting in Colorado right at the moment. I know Colorado has its own exchange, so I think I'd find that out as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Although that 800 number will direct you whether or not you're in a state that. So what will start happening in probably the next couple of weeks is there will start to be public service announcements that you'll see on TV. And there'll be a general 1-800 number that you can call, a toll-free number, and they will be able to direct you whether or not your state has set up its own marketplace or whether or not they're relying on the federal government. But that's a really good point, Marjorie. We should probably explain to our audience that there are a number of ways that these marketplaces can be established. So, and it was up to the state to make these decisions under the law. So the law allowed states to either set up their own marketplaces or to basically allow the federal government to run it for them. I think, and probably for the consumer, there won't be a lot of difference whether or not your state has set up its own marketplace or whether or not the federal government is running it. But there will be some differences. Most of this is really more of a behind-the-scenes issue to for insurers and other people who are working with the marketplaces. But to give you an example, 26 states have decided to let the federal government run the entire marketplace for them. 16 states have set up their own marketplaces. Some of them are Colorado, New York, California, Oregon. A number of others have set up their own marketplaces. And then finally, 8 states have decided to do, there's a hybrid model where they leverage the federal government's technology, but still largely kept control of the whole exchange, the exchanges and the processes around them. So that's sort of how it broke down. Again, I think from a consumer standpoint, there probably won't be a huge amount of difference whether or not the state has set up its own marketplace or has decided to let the federal government do it. There are some standardized rules that everybody has to follow so that, you know, you don't have a completely different experience, say, in Colorado or the state where I live, which has its own exchange, Pennsylvania, which is where I live, is using a federal marketplace.
You know, that's really useful because I had that question, John, as to, you know, would I be impacted differently depending upon the state I lived in? So that's reassuring news. So thank you so much. You know, the new law also makes some changes, I know, to the insurance market by eliminating pre-existing conditions, which I think many of us are aware of, the changing insurance rating rules, ensuring that people cannot be turned down. Can you give our audience an overview of these new rules and how it will impact them generally? I think it's good news, isn't it, John?
It is good news. And, again, this is one of these things that, depending on which state you live in, the rules are very different. So, I mentioned we currently live in Pennsylvania, but prior to living in Pennsylvania, I lived in New York. And New York was actually one of the states that was used as a model for many of the requirements in the law. So if you're in a state that has not changed trading rules, you're probably under something called health experience rating. And what that means is for an individual, you have to complete a health questionnaire. And then that health questionnaire goes to the insurer, and they use that to basically come up with a rate. And yeah, depending on your health, you can get a good rate or a bad rate. Under health experience rating, in general, the people who tend to do very well in health experience rating are younger and male, because young men don't tend to utilize a lot of medical services. So unless you're born with some or have contracted some kind of a condition that requires a lot of medical care, men under 40 tend to get very favorable rates under the current health experience rating. Interestingly, women do not get particularly good, in the same age bracket, do not get particularly good rates, so under women under 40, because they get rated up heavily for the cost of having children.
Right.
Additionally, people who, you know, may have had a pre-existing condition, so they may have had cancer, even though they may be cancer-free, they will get rated up for that. People who are older, regardless of their health status, tend to get rated up. So so that's really how it works today. That's going away. Health insurers can no longer require you, starting in January, to fill out a health experience questionnaire, a medical questionnaire. We are going to move to something that's called community rating. And so what will happen is everybody, the young, healthy men, young, healthy women, older people, sick people, all be rated together in one pool. So they'll basically be a medical experience for individuals and a medical experience for small businesses, because those are the two that will be under community rating. And so that will be basically the medical rate will be determined that way. There are two adjustments that are allowed under the law. These are things that are currently done today, so they're not anything new. They're the only two adjustments that will still be permitted, though. One is for tobacco use. under the law, insurers are allowed to increase your rates for up to 50% if you're a regular tobacco user, and that is defined as someone who uses, who smokes at least once a day for the past 6 months. Now, I can tell you, having been on many insurance industry calls, that there are no insurers that are planning on rating people up 50%, although many insurers do plan to do between a 5 and 10% rate increase, because they, one of the reasons they're going to do that is they actually are going to encourage people to enter smoking, enter in complete smoking cessation programs, because if you enter in complete that smoking cessation program, that rate increase will be removed. So they're actually going to use it as a bit of a carrot and a stick to get people to enter smoking cessation programs. So that's one adjustment that's allowed under community rating. The second is for age. Today, in most states that have community rating, you're allowed to do a what's called a 5-to-1 age rating, which means that the oldest person in the insurance pool, which in a commercial, an individual insurance pool would be 64, even though people sometimes work past 64 and are covered under commercial insurance, and the youngest is 19. So currently, most states, the 64-year-old can be, they don't have to be, they can be charged 5 times as much as the 19-year-old. And starting in 2014, that will be decreased to 3-to-1. So those are the two adjustments that are allowed, and I think they will overall be an improvement for most
yes.
people.
Yes.
There are a couple of other changes that are important under the law that I do want to point out. Additionally, today, insurers can turn anybody away they want in most states, not in all states, but in most states. We'll be moving away from that. We're going to be moving to something called guaranteed issue, which means that basically anybody who wants to buy an insurance policy has to be allowed to do so. But the only reason you can say no is if you find out that they've done something fraudulent on the application. Otherwise, insurers have to take everybody and they have to renew everybody. So that's a big, another big consumer protection that's available under the law.
That's great. Well, and I particularly love the idea of incenting people to adopt healthier lifestyles. I think that's long overdue. So, but thank you. That is, you have given us in a very succinct and clear way, John, some of the key ways that this will impact consumers. You're really clearing out the trees in the forest and helping us see this. Do you have some advice, I know you do, about the things individual people should consider when they're choosing insurance in these new marketplaces? And I know
absolutely.
It has to do with risk tolerance, doesn't it?
It does, it does. And I think I need to explain how the insurance policies will be displayed for most people in these new marketplaces so they understand. So the other thing that happens in the individual and small business market is that we will be moving to all plans in there. There'll be a lot of standardization in the way plans are presented, as well as sort of the plan design. They won't be identical, but by insurance providers. However, we are moving to something called actuarial value, and basically what that means is plans will fall into four categories: platinum, which is the richest, gold, which is the second richest, silver, which is not very rich, and then bronze, which are really catastrophic plans. And so people will go there and they will see these four different categories of health insurance options for themselves. And then they'll be able to click those categories and see the different options the different health insurers are offering. What's going to happen is basically people are going to have to make some decisions as to what's important to them. So if you go for the platinum level, which will be very, very rich coverage with, low co-payments at the doctor's offices and low cost sharing if you need to go to the hospital or have that outpatient surgery, et cetera, you're going to, there's a trade-off for that type of rich coverage. The premiums are going to be much higher. So to give you an idea, Probably on average, from what I've seen nationally, a platinum plan will cost somewhere between $400 and about $450 per month, depending on what state you live in and depending on some of the other things around the rates that the insurers put together. On the other hand, a bronze plan, which is largely a catastrophic plan, we talked about that. We're talking probably about you're going to put out $3,000 per month, or not per month, $3,000 total before you get any insurance coverage. You know, those plans could be in the low 200s. So there's going to be a big difference. So you're going to need, and then obviously the silver and gold will be somewhere in the middle there. So people are going to need to decide, well, am I willing to do, I don't care, I want really rich coverage and I'm willing to spend the money for it. Or, I just really want insurance just in case something bad happens to me. I get into a car accident or something like that and I have to go to the hospital. Or am I somewhere in between? So there's going to, need to be some sort of, people are going to need to do some risk tolerance. They're probably also going to need to, frankly, do a little bit of math around making these decisions, because if you don't think you're going to utilize a lot of services, that $3,000 deductible may make a lot of sense for you. But if you are sicker, the platinum plan, where you get very, very rich coverage, may make a lot of sense for you. So these are the types of decisions people will need to be making. It's not dissimilar to people who work at larger corporations where they have multiple insurance choices, but now people in the individual who are purchasing individually will now be making those decisions.
Yes, that's very, very helpful, John. Thank you so much. And again, we encourage everybody to start thinking of that, even though it's only mid-August. We are fast approaching October 1. I want to stop here for just a moment, see if we have any callers on the line today for John Mills. We're updating all of you on the Affordable Care Act and its implications for you and your family. Anybody on the line? Well, if not, please, by the way, do lodge your questions and your comments on eCare Diary. We will definitely bring them up again when John comes back for another update on the Affordable Care Act. So please do let us know what's of concern to you. John, how will the Affordable Care Act impact caregivers? All of this, of course, all the way along, our whole discussion today is we've been talking about caregivers and their families, but specifically, do you see ways that this is going to impact the caregiver, the family caregiver?
I do. I think there are a number of things, and Marjorie, you and I have had this conversation more than once. You know, it's not unusual for people who are caring for a sick and aging loved one to quit their job and go and care for them full time. And many, not all, but there's not an insignificant number of those people who decide, who basically go uninsured. And so if you are a caregiver and you're caring for a sick or aging loved one, you will now have ways to get insurance. Additionally, one of the things we haven't talked about, but that's very important, is that you'll be eligible, depending on your income, you may be eligible for assistance in paying your premiums. So, for example, the Affordable Care Act has different levels of what they call premium subsidies to help people pay for it. So if you are at 100% of the poverty level, which is about $11,500 per year, if that's what you're earning, you can get almost all of your insurance premium paid for by the Affordable Care Act. And these subsidies go all the way up to 400% of the poverty level, which is a little over $40,000 per year. Now, they're on what's called the sliding scale. So as your income goes up, the subsidy goes down. But as I always say, even if you're 400% of the poverty level and you're getting a little bit of your premium paid for, it's better than nothing. So I think that's a really big thing to remember. If you are a family caregiver and you have made the decision to leave your job and you don't have insurance, you can get insurance. I think the other thing to remember is there are probably family caregivers who do stay in their jobs in part because they need the health insurance benefits. That's not an unusual thing in this country because insurance is tied to employment. So again, this may also allow people who really would like the opportunity to leave their jobs and take care of their sick or aging loved one full time to do so because they won't be tied to the health insurance benefit. So I think there are a lot of ways this could really benefit caregivers. And unfortunately, there isn't a lot of data out there about how many family caregivers are uninsured. We know how many total uninsured there are in the U.S., which is about 50 million. But we don't know how many of those are actually caring for someone. So it'll be very interesting to see what impact this has.
This is a number that John and I have been looking for, how many uninsured caregivers. And the day will come when we can announce it on this show. Right, John?
Right. Well, if any of our listeners know, please let us know.
Exactly. Well, now I'm going to put you on the spot here, John. We've just got a couple minutes more for an additional question. And it has to do with a big topic, I'm sorry to say. It's the individual mandate. We hear a lot about that. Can you explain what it is and how it impacts the average person?
Okay, yes, and thank you, Margaret.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
No, I'm really glad you did because, again, you know, one of the reasons that we've been holding this series is, you know, whether or not you like the law or not, I want people to have an understanding of what's really in there, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. So I'd like to at least, you know, have people making intelligent decisions with good information. So I'm happy to talk about this. So the individual mandate was upheld by the Supreme Court last year, and it's basically, it's a tax, and it's modeled on what they do in Massachusetts, and they use the tax code to basically penalize people who are uninsured. So the way it will work is starting in 2015, when you file your 2014 taxes, you will be asked to fill out a new section of your 1040 form, which will be about your health insurance coverage. And you'll be asked to put in the insurer and the policy number and maybe a little bit more information. And then this won't be true immediately, but in a few years it will be. They'll do spot checking probably the first couple of years. And obviously if you get audited and it turns out you've been dishonest, you'll be subject to the penalty. Eventually, they are going to supposedly have a database that they can query to actually confirm that people really have insurance. But that's what the individual mandate is. And the tax will be starting in 2014. It's actually very tiny in the first year. It's $95 for people who are uninsured or 1% of their adjusted gross income. It will then go up to $325 in 2015 and 2% of your adjusted gross income. And then in 2016 and beyond, it will be $695 or 2.5% of your adjusted gross income. And that amount will be adjusted to inflation, so it will go up by a small amount each year. But that's really how the individual mandate works. It's basically a tax penalty. If you're getting a refund and you don't have insurance, that tax penalty will be deducted from your refund. If you owe money, it'll be taxed on. Additionally, people have asked in the past, what happens if you're insured for only part of the year? It will be prorated. So if you're insured for 6 months and uninsured for 6 months, you would only pay 6 months of that penalty. But that's really, it's really pretty straightforward how it works.
That's a very succinct and clear explanation, and thank you so much for that, John. We will, our listeners, you can be assured that we will give you periodic updates on the Affordable Care Act, and John Mills is definitely the person to do that, as you can see from his clear explanations today. We encourage you to get on making those risk tolerance decisions, identifying whether your state is where your state is in terms of working with the federal government or having its own exchange. And thank you again so much, John, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Marjorie. It was a pleasure. I love being on the show and particularly talking about this topic.
Yes, I know. It's great. And we encourage our listeners to listen in again to our next Caregiver and Physician Conversation show, which will air on August 27th, Tuesday, August 27th at 2 p.m. Eastern. We'll be doing it the third in our series with Dr. Guarneri and Dr. Bommelger on what really, really matters for caregivers. Our topic will be how to decide what kind of a caring doctor and a caring situation you want. We're all different. We have different personalities. And so the two doctors are going to help us sort out how we listen for and determine what kind of caring situation we want. Thanks again to all of you. This is Marjorie Pabst. Have a good rest of your day. Goodbye.